Today is August 3rd, Tuesday night at Sha'arei Tefillah. We're studying Mishnah, Masechet Sukkah, Perek Bet, Mishnah Aleph. And by the way, this is the first public class I'm giving under the auspice of the Jewish Studies Initiative of North Texas, so we should say
Mazal Tov.
Mazal Tov. I was going to say Hallelujah. Mazal Tov. It's good also.
Well, and so, I noticed you forgot to tell her this week, and the post was under the auspices.
Indeed so. Indeed so. So, Perek Bet of Masechet Sukkah, Mishnah Aleph. Everyone has a source in front of them, and this time I photostated it with the Hebrew and facing English. Hayashen tachat hamita basuka lo yatsa yedei chovato. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, nohagin hayinu, shehayinu yeshenim tachat hamita bifnei haskenim, velo amru lanu davar. Let's stop there and go back. So the first word, hayashen, and the root is yud shin nun, sleep. Hayashen, the sleeper, the person who sleeps. Tachat hamita, right, under the bed. And we can imagine beds like we have today that are on four posts or legs, and there's room to get in under the bed and sleep there. Of course, the question might be asked, how high is the bed? How much room is there? But it is what it says. He slept under the bed. And the halacha is that the hayashen tachat amita besukah, so the assumption is you're in a kosher sukkah, and in the kosher sukkah there's a bed, and you slept under the bed, lo yatsa yadei chovato, didn't fulfill his obligation. Right? And of course we'll ask ourselves, why? Why didn't he fulfill his obligation? And then we have another statement, Amar Rav Yehuda, nohagin hayinu. Nohagin, the verb there is the predicent participle, noheg, like minhag, right? We were accustomed. Nohagim hayinu, we used to be accustomed. We used to have the custom. We used to do something. What do we used to do? Shahayinu yeshenim tachat amita. That we were, and as we used to, yeshenim, we used to sleep, tachat amita, bifnei haskenim. In the presence of the elders, we, and it sounds like we means us younger people, we used to sleep, tachat amita, and it means in the sukkah, on Sukkot.
You can sleep under the sabin. So under the mita, of course.
Right, so Ayala just answered the question I didn't even ask yet. What earlier material have we seen that relates to this? And that's one of the answers, and we'll just go to that in a second. So when I finish the sentence, at the end of the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, he says, the last word of the second line, V'lo amru lanu davar, and they didn't say to us anything. And the assumption being, we slept under the bed, and they didn't say anything, the sages didn't say anything, so it must be okay. Okay, so now let's go to the questions I asked, and one of them will bring us to the Mishnayot in the previous chapter. Very good, that's what the Gemara says. We'll have to ask what that matters, though. But let's go to the questions. The first question I asked, why do you think that anyone would ever yoshen tachat amita? And I give you a hint there. Think back to the time of Beit HaMikdash. Why would anyone sleep under the mita?
You talk about under the silver?
Under the mita, under the bed.
Under the bed.
It took me a long, long time to figure this out. But when I figured it out, I realized it's simple. Right. Right. If there were millions of people in Yerushalayim, and right, we have the testimony of Roman historians that you have over a million people in Yerushalayim at the end of Beit Sheni, all of the Olei Regel, all the pilgrims who are coming to be in the city. So if it's Shavuot And if it's a Pesach, so they can sleep outside. But during Sukkot, where are you going to put them all? How many Sukkot can you build? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about basically bunk beds, sleeping on the ground, and then a bed on top of you, and someone sleeping on the bed on top of you. They're piling them into the sukkah like sardines. So that's the why of it. And when we read that Rabbi Yehuda remembers that they used to sleep under the bed and the skenim didn't say anything, well, the skenim was sleeping on the beds, and I assume the younger people were sleeping under the skenim.
Not the skenim.
Skenim are the elders. Okay. So that already brings us to what Ayala brought up. Number two, where have we already seen material in two different Mishnayot? Excuse me? Right. Right. That is possibly conceptually related to this subject of Hayishen Tachat Mitah. And indeed, Ayala is referring to Mishnah Gimel of the previous chapter. And I'll just remind everyone what it says there. It talks about spreading out a sedin, right? Spreading out a sheet, either over the schach to prevent the sun from bothering you too much, or under the schach to prevent the leaves from falling. And then it says that if you put this sedin horizontally on the four bedposts, and we're assuming these bedposts go up high, then it's pasul. But if they only have two bedposts, so that the sedin is in a fashion of like what we call in English a tent, and there's no gog, there's no roof, then we said it's okay, it's kasher. And that again was in Mishnah Gimel. So we could say that Mishnah was about some type of hefsek, right? Some type of barrier, some type of interruption between you and the schach. I'm not referring to the case that has the sedin over the schach, but the case that has sedin under is a barrier between you and the schach. And it's not good. It's pasul. It's like a sukkah betocha sukkah. It's like a sukkah within a sukkah, and the sukkah that's closest to you is not kasher, because its schach is a sedin, is a sheet that's mikabel tuma, or that doesn't grow from the ground. So it's not kosher. So in our case, you also have, in a certain case, a sukkah betoch sukkah. You certainly have a barrier between you and the schach. In this case, it's the bed of the person who is over you, whether he's in the bed or not, but the bed is over you. And I assume that bed is not kosher for schach. It's a kli, right? It's a mat that's made for sleeping on. So it's mikabel tumach a kli. So we can understand why lo yatsa yedei chovato. The question would be, however, why does Rabbi Yehuda say it's kasher? Why does Rabbi Yehuda allow us? And he apparently does allow us, based on his experience with the skenim, he allows us to sleep under the mitah. How could that be good in light of Mishnah Gimel? Another Mishnah that relates to our Mishnah is also Mishnah Bet of that's also although that's really like a sedin that's over the schach. We're here talking about something that's under the schach. It's sukkah betoch sukkah, right? Sukkah al gabei sukkah. Mishnah Bet had talked about a sukkah that has a first floor and a second floor. Right?
First and second, I've never seen that.
Excuse me? You've never seen it, well?
Not
you haven't
seen
been around
it.
Enough. What that Mishnah had said, I'm just going to read, that Mishnah Bet had said, sukkah gabei sukkah. Sukkah over sukkah. El yunak shera b'taptuna psula. The upper one is kosher, obviously, because the upper one is nothing above it. But the tachtona, the lower one, is psula. And by the way, there Rabbi Yehuda had said, im ein diorin bel yona tachtona ksera. If, the way we interpret it was, if the upper one is not livable, then the lower one is kosher. So if the upper one is not so strong so as to support something as a roof, then it could be the Tachtonaz Ksheira. So, now we have a certain one-to-one correspondence between something in Perek Aleph and something in Perek Bet. Right? In our Mishnah, the Tana Kama says you can't sleep under the mitah, just like in Mishnah Bet of chapter 1, it says that you can't sleep in a sukkah that has over it a sukkah. Whereas in that same Mishnah in chapter 1, Rabbi Yehuda did allow you, at least in a certain case, to sleep in a sukkah that has over it a sukkah. Just like in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda allows you to sleep in a sukkah when you're under the bed. So perhaps there's some type of connection here. It's not clear, but perhaps there's some type of a connection. Okay, that's just a comparison there. Let's go a little bit further. In my questions, we did already questions 3 and 4. They're simple. 3, why do you think that Hayashen tachat mitah lo yatsa? Why didn't he fulfill his obligation? And the answer is because he is not sleeping under the tzach. He's sleeping under a bed. There's a hefsek, right? There's a barrier. Just like the case with the seat. And question 4, does Rabbi Yehuda agree or disagree with the Tana Kama? He disagrees. He says you can sleep under the mitah. How would this halacha be said according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda would say, Hayashen tachat amita yatsa. Right? Okay.
Without any conditions?
Without any conditions. Apparently. Say it again. Yes.
He's under the bed.
So you're saying
is something not kasher.
For some reason, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the mitah doesn't serve as a barrier. He's still in the sukkah. Remember what we talked about at the very beginning when we learned Mishnayot Bet and Gimel. I had asked the following question, a bit facetiously, but I had said the following. The Mishnah says, Mishnah Gimel says, you can't sleep in a sukkah with a sadin on top. That is, between you and the tzach, because it's a barrier, it's an unkosher tzach you're sleeping under. Okay. But then I said, wait a second. What happens if that sadin is a little bit lower? And a little bit lower. And a little bit lower. What happens if that sadin is actually your blanket? Are you allowed to sleep with a blanket in the sukkah? We assume you are. And if you say you can sleep with a blanket, because it's like a barrier, are you allowed to sleep with clothes? Right? There are a barrier between you and the tzach. It looks like you're allowed to sleep with clothes on, right? And you're allowed to sleep with a jacket on, you're allowed to sleep with pajamas, you're allowed to sleep with a blanket. So why is a blanket okay, but a sadin that's hanging a little bit higher is not okay? Right?
That makes sense.
But the blanket is not acting as some type of a covering for the sukkah. It's a body covering, but not a covering for the sukkah.
Okay, that's good. How can we define now the difference between a body covering and actually a roof? What legal means can we use?
It has to be attached to the walls.
Okay, it could be that it has to be attached to the walls. You know, that sounds good. I didn't think of that.
We said that.
Right.
I'm thinking of something else, which is related. Okay. The other thing we could think of is height.
Yeah, how
right?
far?
Because if the blanket is just all on my body and I'm sleeping on the bed, it's not high enough to be schach for a sukkah. Mm-hmm. How high would the blanket / sadin have to be for it to be a sukkah so that it interrupts between me and my sukkah?
Ten tfachim.
So perhaps that's the point.
From what?
From the ground. Ten tfachim from the ground, yeah.
Not from the bed.
Okay. I I would say from the ground. So if my sedin is hanging in midair and it's over 10 tefachim, then I'm probably going to say it's no good. But if it's under 10 tefachim, perhaps it's just like a blanket floating in air, but it's still a blanket because it's not high enough to be a sukkah.
But it seems like, I mean, you could have a very tall bed so that it's less than, it's more than 10 tefachim above the ground, but it seems like it needs to be at least 10 tefachim above the surface on which you are. So
I don't know.
If you're lying on the ground, it would be one thing, or standing on the ground. If you're on the, if you're on a bed, you've now have sort of a pseudo ground under you.
Yeah, but I think we're measuring it from the ground and not from where you are. Because we're measuring, is it in a place that could be a kosher sukkah? And that depends on the ground. So now this brings us now to the following question. How high is the bed that you are sleeping under? And then remember the Tanakhama says, lo yatsa.
But if it's higher, like 10 tefachim,
no, the opposite. The higher it is, the worse it is.
The worse it is.
Right? So now let's read. Say it again. Ten tefachim is the height of this table.
Okay, that's all right.
So let's look at the first source I brought. Aha, I should have made it B1, but instead I made it 18. But that's fine.
Okay. I'm probably distracting this. Perhaps distracts from the point you're working toward, but to me it's a little confusing to put what we talked about before with what we're reading now, because what we read now, it says if you sleep on the bed, under the bed, in the sukkah, you have not fulfilled the obligation. It doesn't say the sukkah is invalid.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
Because the sukkah just has a bed in it.
Right.
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 And so I guess it's talking about the obligation to sleep in the sukkah.
Right.
I guess.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem that there's anything wrong with it. In other words, you still, you know, you can, you just, you don't have, is the sukkah, is it the only place you're allowed to sleep in a sukkah? I mean, I don't know.
Right, so the sukkah is not psula, but
right. The
person slept under the bed, didn't fill his obligation.
Didn't sleep in a sukkah.
Right.
Transferring to me is very high for a sukkah.
It's like
that. Before you can sleep, kept to two levels below, and I'm here.
Well, don't sleep under the bed.
Well, what I'm getting at is, I mean, do I have to sleep in a sukkah?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least one night, I think.
All nights.
All nights, actually. You have to eat, you have to eat certain meals. In
all your meals.
Okay, that's the details.
It's a minimum of what you have to
eat. But at this point, yes.
You're supposed to sleep in it every night.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what is the chapter one Mishnah, what are those talking about?
Right. You're right.
Yeah,
okay.
You're right. It's actually talking about
the language of chapter one and chapter two is very different. Chapter 1's language is about the pasul, or the kashrut of the sukkah.
Right.
And chapter 2 is about the act you did. Did you fulfill your obligation or not? And you could say we're comparing apples and oranges. You could say that. But I think more likely you can say differently. It's simply a matter of, it's a linguistic matter. It doesn't matter. I'll explain why. In Mishnah Gimel of chapter 1, when we're talking about hanging this sadin, the sheet, in the sukkah, the way you hang the sheet is wall to wall. So therefore, it wouldn't make sense to say if you slept under the sadin, you didn't fulfill your obligation, there's no other place to sleep, because that's the way people hang sadinim from wall to wall.
Well, by default, because you don't have a sukkah that's kishirah, you haven't fulfilled your obligation because you're not in a fit sukkah.
And in Mishnah Aleph of Perek Bet, it doesn't say the sukkah is psula because there's place in the sukkah where you're not under the bed. But Indeed, if you had a sukkah in which it was wall-to-wall beds, and on the beds were sleeping people, and the only place to sleep was under the bed, then it could have said the sukkahs. No, it wouldn't have said the sukkahs psula, because you can still climb on top of the people on the beds.
Well, the people on the beds are okay.
Right, but that's simply because you can sleep over the beds, but you can't sleep over the sadin in the sukkah. In Mishnah Gimel of chapter Aleph with the sadin, you couldn't sleep over the sadin. There's no way to do that. So the sukkah is psula. There's no place you can sleep in it that's kosher.
So what is the difference
mitah? Say it again, please.
If it's mitot all over,
yeah,
you sleep under the mitah.
But you still wouldn't use the language of the sukkah psula, because you could always sleep over the beds, on the beds.
Okay.
So I don't think that there's any difference. It's just a matter of, it's a technical matter.
What's mitah?
Excuse me?
Mitah is what?
Beds. Mitah is bed, and mitot are beds. So I had thought of that, but in the end I didn't think there was anything to it. Okay. Mishnah 5. How... I'm sorry, why did I say Mishnah 5? I meant question 5. Excuse me, please.
Can I ask you a question about...
Oh, no, I wanted to do the Tosefta, right. Excuse me, yeah.
Can I ask a question looking back at Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav.
Mishnah Aleph, Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav.
Mishnah Vav, Perek Aleph. And what I'm not sure of is, I think there's two parts to this one. Part of it being that if the board hand foregoes why it was placed over it, it is valid, except that one may not sleep under it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that to my thinking would say that this mitah would basically be this floor. It probably has a some sort of slats to hold up the mattress, and so it's probably at least tefachim. So that one cannot sleep under it. So that would support the Tanakhama in Mishnah, mm-hmm, in Perek Bet, Mishnah Aleph, that you can't sleep under the bed. Mm-hmm. That would support the Tanakhama.
I don't see the connection at all. Mishnah Vav is talking about schach, that's improper schach.
But if you're sleeping under this, then in a way, this is sort of your schach.
No, but that's the question. Just because you're sleeping under the bed...
Doesn't mean it's your schach.
Doesn't mean your schach, because there is kosher schach
above
you. That's the very question. Does this mitah, does it cancel out
the schach
above you?
Okay, I'm with you.
So let's look at the Tosefta that I brought in 18. Excuse me?
Did we do Mishnah 3?
Mishnah 3 we did not do.
Okay.
We're just at Mishnah 1, and now we're on the sheet in 18, the Tosefta. This Tosefta is also brought in the Talmud Yerushalmi, by the way. It's not brought in the Talmud Bavli. And it says as follows. Ma'aseh be'anshei Yerushalayim. Ma'aseh means a story, right? A deed, once upon a time. Be, a story about, a story of Anshei Yerushalayim, the people of Yerushalayim, Shayu Mishalshalin Mitotehen Bechalonot. They would send down or hang down their beds from their windows. Shegovohin Asara. Windows that were high Asarat Fachim. Umisakachin al gebehen v'yishenim tachtehem, and they would put schach over them and sleep under them. Let me explain.
So here's this mitah hanging. The minimum height above the ground. And schach over it.
And they sleep under the mitah.
And then they sleep under the mitah. So that, I guess my question is, doesn't this mitah cancel the schach?
That's the same issue in our Mishnah. At least the Mishnah says it's fine. I'm sorry, the Tosefta says it's fine.
So,
let me explain, okay? So think of beds that have four bedposts that extend higher than the level of the bed.
Mm.
Right? Not as high as the bedpost we discussed in Mishnah Gimel of the previous chapter. There we had four bedposts that really came up pretty high. Asara, at least, if not more. Here, we have very low bedposts. Just a little bit higher than the bed itself. But it's not Asara Tfachim. So, we want to use those bedposts to put the schach on top of them. But if we do, that schach won't be Asara Tfachim because the bedposts aren't that high. So we suspend the whole bed with the bedpost in the air. The bed is like hanging down from windows of the house, so that the bedposts are now suspended in air, so that they're higher than Asarat Fahim from the ground, the bedposts, the top of the bedposts. So let's say the bedposts now are reaching this height, and we put tzchach over the bedposts, and now we're going to have someone sleep in the bed, but also someone sleep under the bed. Why are we doing this? Because Jerusalem is filled to overflowing with people. There's no place to put all the pilgrims. So I took as many pilgrims as I could into my own sukkah. I can't put them into my house because you can't sleep in the house. So what do? I make a makeshift sukkah by suspending my bed from my window. And I put people in this double-decker sukkah now. They sleep on the bed and they also sleep under the bed. And since the schach that's over the bedpost is at least 10 tefachim from the ground, then not only is my sukkah kosher, but also it's kosher for people to sleep under the bed. So what did we learn from this? We learned from this that in Yerushalayim, people used to sleep under the beds in a sukkah. That is proof for Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah. Under condition, of course, that the schach is asara, is 10 tefachim from the ground.
Can you draw it on the board? I can't understand.
Yeah.
Do you think that on this day they have houses some floor? It's not making sense. I don't understand.
The window of the house only has to be this high. Mm-hmm. And I guess I put a board like out the window of my house and a board out the window of my neighbor's house across the courtyard.
Yeah, it's a courtyard. You can picture there's a courtyard that's the size of the bed. And so on that side we tie something and tie... But can I... Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
So here's two houses. Here's two houses. Okay. All right, here's two houses.
Yeah.
And these houses have windows here.
Two more. Make two more.
No, I don't need
to.
You have four posts.
I can't draw that.
He's not looking down.
I'm looking from here. I'm looking from...
Okay, all right, good.
I'm looking
here. I misunderstood.
So then I have my bed. I have my bed. And this is my bed. It's a little, it has bed posts. And from the from here to here, from the bottom of the bedpost to the top of the bedpost, is not Asarat Fahim. Okay. So what do? I don't put the bed on the ground. I suspend it in air. I mean, the Talui Bavir.
How come?
You said how come, then you said how. Two different questions. How come?
How? How are you...
Doesn't matter how. I'll find a way to do it.
Both windows. There's a rope.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
I want to sleep underneath it.
So anyway, now this height right here
is over Asarat Tefachim from the ground. So right now I can just put Tzchach over the bedposts, and I have a good sukkah, and not only a good sukkah, but a double-decker sukkah, because one of my guests will sleep on the bed, and another guest will sleep on the ground under the bed.
Okay. But, I have a question. Why did you say, from what we read here, that somebody slept on the bed?
Because the whole reason they're doing this is to have more and more people in Sukkot. So, if they only had a need for one person, they wouldn't have someone sleeping under the bed. He would sleep on the bed. But there's someone in the bed already, but we need more room, so we put them under the bed. And that's what the Brighta says. The Tosefta said, actually didn't say it, but assume it.
That's what, because what I wanted to say to you was, I finally learned that I couldn't ever understand what my wife was talking about when she said, get the bed, move the bed, do this, do that. When she says the bed, she means the frame. What goes on the frame is a mattress.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
And so, if you are looking down on something,
mm-hmm.
and just have, there's a post and a post and a post and a post, this could be open.
Yeah.
And so if I was trying to construct a sukkah in this space,
mm-hmm.
I could just be using this frame and put here, instead of a mattress, put
Scott.
And sleep here.
But then there's a tall one. There's a ten fucking.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole
and
thing
it's,
is...
And you,
is,
you
is
just needed a frame. You needed something. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything to build my sukkah with.
Here is that the frame is
I have nothing to build my sukkah with.
Mm.
But I've got this space between the two houses. Mm. I've got this space, and the bed will fit.
And you've got really no place because you've just got enough space there. Think about it. This bed frame isn't real huge, which means the space between them is probably pretty small, too. So, trying to build something...
So in this particular source, David could be right.
So it's two people sleep there?
David is saying perhaps it's only one person.
Yes. Well,
and the frame is just being used to hold the scarf.
Right,
that's all.
Right, right. So that in this
and
source...
And you needed to suspend it because to get it up high enough.
Right, right.
But well, what can sleep?
There is no other man, says David. Perhaps it's just a way to easily construct an extra sukkah by using a bed frame.
Yeah.
And I just don't remember if there are other sources that contradict what you're saying,
means,
but in this source, you're right.
Absolutely.
But of course, in our Mishnah, we admit that it's talking about sleeping under the bed.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's read another source here that I have, the Talmud Bavli and Rashi, and 19. And this is on our Mishnah. It's the...
Can I say this?
Yes,
the,
of course.
The premise of what I said was, what is the real meaning of the word that we've translated as bed? Does it mean the bed frame?
Right.
Or the thing that you really sleep on?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And if it means the thing that you actually lie on, then what I said can't be right.
Right, right.
It's what,
yeah.
Or maybe it's unclear, like our in our language it's unclear. Although it was unclear, it used to be clear to me, but then my wife corrected me as she usually does.
Oh, boy.
No need to pass that on.
Yeah. I want to hear that.
There's a bed
anyway.
In the bed frame.
Right. A mattress in the bed. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Mm. Okay, so Gemara. Gemara Vaha. Again, this is the Gemara on our Mishnah. And it doesn't give any introduction, just says the following. Gemara Vaha Leka Asara. And behold, there isn't ten. Ten Tfachim. What's it talking about? It's talking about our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah just said, if you sleep under the bed, didn't fill your obligation. Rabbi Yehuda says they used to sleep under the beds. And on that, the Gemara says, but wait a second, there's not ten. What are you talking about? Where isn't there a ten? Let's read further. Tirgama Shmuel, explain Shmuel, b'mita asara, in a bed of ten. A bed of ten. Okay, let's try and figure out what we're talking about. So it means that the bed, it means that usually the bed, and now I mean the mattress, usually the bed is under 10 tefachim from the ground. And so our beds are usually under 10 tefachim from the ground, usually, but not always. And like in movies of big classic bedroom suites, sometimes the beds are really high. But usually they're under 10 tefachim. And for some reason that bothers the Gemara that a bed is under 10 tefachim. And then Shmuel says, don't worry, in our Mishnah, we're talking about a bed that is 10 tefachim or more. So how does that help? Ah, now I understand how it helps. The Tana Kam in our Mishnah says that you can't sleep under the bed. So then the Gemara says, wait a second, why not? A bed is usually less than 10. Why couldn't you sleep under a bed that's less than 10? It's just like sleeping under a blanket. Right? It's only this high. It's not a roof. It's not a roof if it's less than 10. It doesn't constitute a structure. It's just a high blanket that's made out of something very, very hard. It's just a blanket. So then Shmuel says, don't worry, we'll have to say that our Mishnah, when the Tana Kama said you can't sleep under the bed, it meant special beds that are 10 tefachim high or more. And once a bed is 10 tefachim high, then it's already a structure of itself. It's like a roof. It's not a blanket anymore. It's like a roof. And now you have a unkosher roof that's interrupting between you and the schach above. So notice what that means. It means that the Gemara has a difficulty understanding the Tana Kama. And it says the Tana Kama doesn't make sense under normal circumstances. It must be a special case of very high beds. Because otherwise, what's wrong with sleeping under the bed? Says the Gemara. And then I put in three dots here. And in three dots, I'm skipping over 50 lines. There's a long, long discussion there of 10 tefachim constituting, 10 tefachim high, constituting an entity of a building in the laws of ritual impurity. It goes back and forth. What constitutes a building in ritual impurity? For example, you know the law is that if you have a dead corpse under a roof, then everything under that roof becomes ritually impure. But what if your dead corpse under a blanket? No. Again, what constitutes a roof? And the answer is 10 tefachim or higher. But if you had, if you suspended a sheet in air over 10 tefachim and had a dead corpse under it, everything under the sheet becomes tamei. But what happens if you suspend the sheet under 10 tefachim? Then that doesn't constitute a roof. It's just a blanket. So we're comparing the Gemara, the laws of Sukkah, to laws of ritual impurity. And then, after all that discussion, the Gemara brings our Mishnah's continuation, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tanan, which means we learned in a Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Noagin Hayinu Shahayinu Yeshinim Tachat Emita Yipaneas Kenim. And he quotes what the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda says, we were accustomed that we used to sleep under the bed in the presence of the Skenim. And right, the Mishnah says, the Skenim didn't say anything, so it's okay. So the question, of course, how could it be that it's okay? You just told me that we must be talking a bed higher than 10. That explains the Tana Kama, that it's a interruption between the Shach and me. Then how do you explain Rabbi Yehuda if it's so high that it clearly should be forbidden to sleep under the bed? The answer is, Shaini Mita Huil Vilag Gaba Asuya. Different is a bed since it, for above it it's made. Different is a bed since for above it it is made.
I understand.
Let's think about it a second. A bed is different than anything else that might be in the air 10 tefachim higher than you, because a bed is made only to sleep on and not to sleep under. So therefore, even if you sleep under the bed can't be considered a roof, because in its essence, it's not a roof. It's only a bed.
Are we getting into the concept of intent?
We're getting into the concept of intent, not so much the individual's intent, but the general intent and the general definition of what a thing is. A bed can never be a roof because a bed is always looked at from above and not from below.
Yeah.
And even if you sleep under the bed, you're not sleeping under a roof. You're sleeping under a bed. Now, this is only explaining Rabbi Yehuda. Tanna Kamma disagrees. Tanna Kamma says, what do you mean? What do you care what it's made for, what it's defined as? If you have a thing interrupting between you and the schach, and a thing is higher than 10 tefachim, then by definition, a thing is a roof. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Roofness, I'm making a word here, right? Roofness is a function not only of height, but also of the definition of the material.
Not want to be sleeping under the bed, let me tell you.
Say it again?
I would not want to sleep under the bed.
Please. If it's the only place available.
I'll probably won't. Okay.
Okay.
I can't breathe while under the bed.
Okay. Let's see the way Rashi explains what we just said. And Rashi, on this segment of Gemara, printed right under where I printed the Gemara, 19, Rashi alata, right? Rashi on the source. The dibur matril, the opening phrase from the Gemara is ho'il v'lagaba asuya. Since for its aboveness it is made. I translated better earlier. How did I translate it? I
don't know.
For above it is made. Rashi explains. Lishen, or in our language, lishon al gabav lo tachtea, to sleep on it and not below it, lefichach ein la shem ohel. Therefore, it doesn't have the name of a roof. You can't call it a roof, because in its essence, it's never a roof. It's something for above and not for below. It's never for protecting you from what's above. It's also always for shielding you from what's below, to make the ground a little bit softer. Livriut. Okay, so the Gemara wants us now to understand the machloket in the Mishnah as follows. That according to the Tanna Kamma, you can't sleep under the bed, because we're talking about a bed that's 10 tefachim higher, and it constitutes an interruption between you and the schach, just like in Mishnah Gimel of the previous chapter. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda allows sleeping under the bed, because he claims that even though it's 10 tefachim or higher, the fact that it's made for sleeping on and not sleeping under defines it always as something other than a roof, and therefore it can't be seen as a roof interrupting between you and the schach roof. Okay? That's logical. So now, let's go on. I guess we're in... in question 5. And we actually just defined question 5. We answered it through these sources. Question 5 was, how might we differentiate between our Mishnah and the one referenced in question 2 in order to support the position of Rabbi Yehuda? Right. The source mentioned in question 2 was, of course, Mishnah Gimel of the previous chapter, but the Sedin. And how are we going to differentiate in order to understand Rabbi that we just did? We said perhaps a Sedin is different than a bed. A Sedin is a roof. A bed can never be a roof because of its very definition. Fine. Question 6. What braita have we earlier seen in which Rabbi Yehuda speaks in a form or a style very similar to the fashion in which he speaks in this Mishnah? If anyone could remember this, they will get a gold star. Because I asked a braita, not a Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is material that we mentioned 2 months ago. I'll give you a hint if no one remembers. Rabbi Yehuda also brought a proof from a story. And in that story, he also said that the Zkenim
Lo amru davar. The skenim didn't say anything, so it must be okay. We learned it on the first Mishnah. You don't have time. You didn't bring your sheets. I'll give you a hint. I'll just say a person's name. Heleni Hamalka. Heleni the Queen. Queen Heleni.
Oh, we're there to Mishnah 1.
Heleni the Queen. Yes. So what was the story? Right, the story was that in the first Mishnah, it says you can't make a sukkah that's more than 20 amot. Amot, right? Like three stories. Remember Yoram told us about 3.5 stories? And then Rabbi Yehuda makshir. Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay to make a sukkah that high. And then in the bright, they brought a proof that he says that Heleni Hamalka, the Queen Heleni, used to have a sukkah that was high as 20 amot and more. And we were all there. And the skenim, when nichnasim and yotzim, they were coming in and out, they were frequenting her sukkah, velo amrula davar. And they didn't say to her anything. And that shows they accepted her sukkah, even though it was higher than 20 amot. So I just thought it was interesting.
Maybe they don't say anything because she's queen.
You should have said that 2.5 months ago.
Yeah, they paid her, yeah, she paid them off.
Well, because she's female.
Well, the Gemara tried that. But the answer was, there were two answers. The answer was, well, first she had sons who had to sleep in her sukkah. And secondly, kol ma'aseha ayu al pi hachamim. All her deeds were according to the sages. She wouldn't have built the sukkah that wasn't kosher. So if she built it, it must be good. Anyway, Rav Yehuda has this custom, at least in two cases, and there's one more actually, which he proves from stories, and which he says if the hachamim didn't point anything out wrong, it must have been okay. That's all. Question 7. Why is the type of proof that Rabbi Yehuda brings here, generally less convincing than some other types of proofs?
You have to infer from a non-action.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You have to infer from a non-action. You can't be certain. Just like Jen just said, there could be other reasons. Ayla said perhaps they were afraid of her. You don't know for certain from a ma'aseh, from an event, and especially from a non-action. You don't, can't be certain. Okay. Let's do question 8, and then we'll read the rest of the Mishnah. How might one refute the proof that Rabbi Yehuda brings here in our Mishnah? Right, our Mishnah says that Rabbi Yehuda proves that sleeping under the bed is okay because we used to do it. And the sages, lo amru lanu davar. The skenim, lo amru lanu davar. Can you think of a way to push aside?
If he was a minor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Somebody not obligated to
the right. Shit. It actually sounds like that from the Mishnah. Because he says, we slept on the beds and the skenim, the sages, didn't say anything, so he was a kid. And that could very well be. Right. So here's an example why this type of proof is not so good, because you don't know all the circumstances, and if you just assume that they were minors, they were ktanim, then the proof already evaporates. Yeah. Unless, of course, Rabbi Yehuda is holding like Beit Shammai that minors are obligated in sukkah.
At what age is someone obligated?
According to the Hillel and Mahalakha, bar mitzvah.
What would Shammai say?
Well, we'll get to a story in which it says when Shammai's grandson was born, he opened up a hole in the roof over the baby's bed and put tzchach over there so the child would be in the sukkah.
So already at the time of birth.
That's what it looks like. We also have evidence that Shammai held that newborn babies have to fast on Yom Kippur.
Oh my gosh!
Did Shammai say that?
Yeah.
If I remember properly, it's not Beit Shammai, it's Shammai. The Sage Shammai. Apparently he was, because he had a grandson who...
He left it to his wife.
Grandkids you can give back to the parents.
He left it to his wife.
Okay. Now I'm going to read the rest of the Mishnah. And the rest of the Mishnah says as follows. When Perek Sheni Mishnah Aleph, the second chapter, the first Mishnah. And we are now going on where we left off. And it says as follows. Ma'aseh b'tabi avdo shel Rabban Gamliel shahaya yashen tachat mita. So, translation. A deed concerning Tabi, the slave of Rabban Gamliel. Shahaya yashen tachat mita, that he used to sleep under the bed in the sukkah.
But as if he was a non-Jew.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. So he's an Eved Knani. He's a Canaanite slave. And the law of a Canaanite slave is, does anyone know? In mitzvot? Eved Knani is chayav, is obligated in all the mitzvot, except for mitzvot aseh shazman gramah, except for positive time-bound mitzvot, an Eved Knani. But the law is that if you, I'm going to say this facetiously, if you want to become a non-Jewish slave of a Jew, you have to take upon yourself all of the mitzvot, except for the positive time-bound mitzvot, which are very few.
Right.
How does it actually work? According to Halacha, if you are a Jew, and you go to the slave market, and you buy a non-Jewish slave, well, within, I can't remember if it's 6 months or a year, you have to convince that person to take upon himself voluntarily all of the mitzvot except for the positive time-bound mitzvot. And if he doesn't agree, you have to sell him to someone else, to a non-Jew.
How many positive mitzvot are there?
Say it again?
How many positive mitzvot are there?
How many positive time-bound mitzvot are there? About 7 or 8 or 9?
Okay, that's not big enough. Well,
so again, it's not that you have to set him free if he doesn't agree. But you have to not have him as a slave. You can sell him to someone else or set him free. And if he agrees, then he is goes to the mikveh and he's circumcised. No. He just goes to the mikveh, but he's not circumcised. He goes to the mikveh and he becomes a partial Jew. And he's yes, he's obligated in all these mitzvot except for the positive time-bound mitzvot.
So, for it, it's not positive for Mishra.
So you're. So what's the question?
I said,
why not?
You're saying why didn't he have to be circumcised?
And Steve gave the answer because it's a positive time bound mitzvah, right?
You have to do
it
on the eighth day.
Yeah. But if you're not make Brit Milah, you have to do it.
What? Okay, but it's still time bound.
Okay. I mean, if you didn't do it, it's not actually a mitzvah of a person. It's a mitzvah of a father.
That's also true. But if you didn't do it, then you have to do it yourself.
Yeah,
well, but by the way, the Gemara also says that it's positive time bound because it can only be done in the daytime and not at night. If I remember correctly, it's been a long time. But in any case, that's the halakha. Okay, so this is our Eved Knani, who belongs to Rabban Gamliel, and he was sleeping under the bed. And the story goes on as follows. You know what? I forgot to read a few words. I apologize. We should not have begun with the word Ma'aseh, but rather Amar Rabbi Shimon. Said Rabbi Shimon, there was a story about Tabi, the slave of Rabban Gamliel, that used to sleep under the bed. Amar lehen Rabban Gamliel lazkenim. Said to them Rabban Gamliel to the skenim. Raitem Tabi Avdi? Did you see Tabi my slave?
Shehu Talmid Chacham, that he is a Torah scholar. V'yodeya sha'avadim piturin min ha'sukkah, he knows that slaves are exempt from the sukkah. Lefichach yashenhu tachat emita. Therefore, he sleeps under the bed. Ulefi darkenu lamadnu, and according to our way we've learned, shehayashen tachat emita lo yatsa yedei chovato. So I'm going to ask a question now. And the question is, where does the story of Tabi and Rabban Gamliel end? Remember, this is Rabbi Shimon speaking, telling a story of Tabi and Rabban Gamliel. Right. But say the whole sentence, because that phrase appears more than once.
It's on one occasion only that he's talking about
it. Right. The story ends with the sentence. Right. Whereas the last words, the last eight words, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the last 10 words are added by who?
The author.
Rabbi Shimon.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah. Rabbi Shimon brings this story to prove his point, which is that you're allowed to sleep under the bed or you're not?
You're not.
You're not. So he comes to support the Tanakhama. So the Mishnah has three parts. The Tanakhama says you can't sleep under the bed. Second part, Rabbi Yehuda says you can't sleep under the bed. Comes Rabbi Shimon and proves you can't sleep under the bed because Tabi slept under the bed specifically because he wasn't obligated. And by the way, the expression Lefi Darkenu probably means by the way. We learn by the way. The story wasn't about that. The story was about Rabban Gamliel showing off how smart his servant is. But it's used by Rabbi Shimon to prove, by the way, that you're not allowed to sleep under the bed. So now we have the Tanakhama says you can't sleep under the bed. Rabbi Shimon says you can't sleep under the bed. And Rabbi says you can sleep under the bed. Apparently. Apparently. Okay. So we did all the questions, 10, 11. Look at question 12. How is the story of Tabi itself an illustration of the pitfalls of the type of proof that Rabbi Yehuda had brought? Keshel.
Well, I mean, he claims that he's a learned man. I mean, do we know that he's learned in this area? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I didn't mean that there's a problem in the text. I just meant that stories in general, as you said earlier, could be problematic, and this particular story could also have been problematic. It's not, but it could have.
But the mitzvah is
just because...
Hi.
Something simpler.
Just because Tabi, who was not obligated and who understood that, slept under the bed, I mean, he could have been intending to sleep in the sukkah. This doesn't necessarily say,
right.
Therefore,
right.
It must be that he slept under the bed because he knew that that would not be valid sleeping in a sukkah.
Right. And if you only saw what happened without the comment of Rabban Gamliel, you just know there was a Talmid Chacham sleeping under the bed. Mm-hmm. And you could have used it as a proof that you're left to sleep under the bed. It's only Rabban Gamliel that adds the comment that explains he slept there because he's not obligated and he didn't want to do the mitzvah, that you know that now the story proves the opposite, proves that you're not allowed to sleep under the bed. But the story itself, just seeing it on film...
That it's okay that he's sleeping under the bed.
Yeah. So I was just pointing out, by the way, that we see here how these stories could be problematic and they need an interpretation. Anyway, there's some interesting things in the story that I want to go into. Let's go through the questions. 13. What is the halachic principle that explains why avadim peturin min sukkah? So we said already. Let's just say it again.
To time bound.
Right. Avadim peturin mi mitzvot asei shazman grama. And then, now look at question 14. What halachic assumption might Rabban Gamliel be making concerning the halachot of one who is patur from a given mitzvah? Right. The Eved is patur, okay, he's exempt. But what should someone who's exempt do? They're exempt, okay, so now what are they supposed to do when they're exempt from a mitzvah? So what Tabi did is he slept under the bed because he was exempt. What assumptions does that show about how you behave when you're exempt from a mitzvah?
You don't do it.
You didn't have to come to that conclusion. You can say that if you're exempt, you can do it if you want. Right? That's why did he sleep under the mitah? Not just because he was exempt, but rather because of another point you have to add. He was exempt and he thought that someone who was exempt shouldn't do the mitzvah. Not just exempt, but shouldn't. Otherwise, why do you sleep under the mitah? He was like emphasizing, I'm not going to do the mitzvah.
Or there just wasn't room, and since I'm exempt, I'll sleep under the bed. You
Exactly. Right. That's the counterpoint.
And I need to be close to Rabban Gamliel, so here's the place that I can sleep, but nobody else can.
Right, so now we have the two sides. In other words, we now have a question. Why did he sleep under the bed? Either because he was making a point that someone who's exempt shouldn't do the mitzvah, or because there was no other room. And really, he could have slept over the bed, and he's allowed to do the mitzvah, even though he's exempt, but given that there were other people that are obligated, he wanted to leave room for them. And given what we said, that the Sukkot were really crowded, right? It could very well be what David said. So that means we go back to my question, the answer now is not clear. So what message do we have here concerning someone who's exempt? Does exempt mean you're not obligated, but you can do it? Or does it mean you're not obligated and you shouldn't do it? The answer is we don't know. Because we don't know why he slept under the bed. Now this whole question of what do you do when you're exempt? Do you refrain from doing the mitzvah? Or are you allowed to, and it might even be a good thing to do the mitzvah? That's a question now in Mishnah, of how you interpret the Mishnah Tzach. So actually a question that comes up in many other contexts concerning exemptions from mitzvot. That I've talked about in other cases. When women are exempt from certain mitzvot, does that mean exempt and you don't do it? Or does it mean exempt and you can even should do it? That, we've discussed that, I think, concerning shofar in this class, and it's actually a famous Tosfot, Masechet Kiddushin, in which he tries to prove that the halakha is that you're exempt, but you should do it. That's religiously valuable. How does he do it? I'll just tell you the story. The Gemara says there in Masechet Kiddushin, Gadol ha-mitzuveh v'oseh mimisha eino mitzuveh. Greater is the person who is commanded and does than the person who is not commanded and does.
Did you mean to say it that way?
Thank you. Greater is the person who is commanded and does. Is that what I said?
That's what you said.
That's what I meant, yeah. Greater is the person who is commanded and does than the person who is not commanded and does. That's the statement.
Because one is an issue of volition, and whereas the other is truly following
the yoke of heaven.
Commandments.
Right. So that's the theological question of the why, but let's just examine the statement. Greater is the person who is commanded and does from the person who is not commanded and does. Well, it says not commanded and does. Mm-hmm. So it's implying that the person not commanded does.
He's allowed to.
And secondly, when it says greater is the person who's commanded and does than the person who's not commanded does, the implication is that the person who is not commanded and does is great, but not as great. It still has value. So Tosfot proves there that if you're not commanded, you still can do, and not only can do, but that there's great value in doing so.
I guess that's why women are encouraged to wear tefillin, or... Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
You didn't mean
what did I
No, no, but actually, so that's why.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, boy.
Actually, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure if he did that on purpose or not. But it's a good opening to what I wanted to say. Yeah, he's planted in the audience. So applying it to our Mishnah, right? So that would mean that Tabi Avdo of Rabban Gamliel, who's not commanded, still, all things being equal, he should have slept over the bed. And why didn't he? Only because there was no room. So then, in other applications of the same principle, so the authorities that follow in the footsteps of Tosfot, that I just mentioned, that proves from the Gemara Kiddushin that there is value in doing mitzvot not commanded, so Tosfot and the commentators who follow in his footsteps, the Ashkenazi approach, says therefore those people who are exempt should nevertheless try to do mitzvot. Whether it's sitting in the sukkah, dwelling in the sukkah, whether it's the saying of Shema, whether it's the waving of the lulav, whether it's the blowing of the shofar. The is a mitzvah to say Shazman Grama.
Yeah.
But what? I didn't say a machloket yet. Getting ahead of me. But the majority opinion of the Rishonim is that even in cases in which we say, even though we say that you should do mitzvot that you're exempt from, there are two exceptions. Says the Shulchan Aruch, bring the Ashkenaz Dorig, which is tefillin and tzitzit. And then there's a later discussion concerning tefillin and tzitzit. Perhaps women should do those also. Perhaps not. There's a discussion. But that's a whole different can of kosher worms. So look how everything connects. We have a okay, let's just do a little bit more. We did all the questions. Let's read from Mishnat Brachot, which is 20 on my sheet, at the very bottom of the page. It's just telling us a little bit about Tabi. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because some of us learned Masechet Brachot together where Tabi was mentioned. So this is Masechet Brachot, Perek Bet, Mishnah Zayin.
I'm sorry, I don't recall you.
Yeah. Very, very bottom of the page.
Well, no, I thought we just did that.
Of the
no,
question
the
sheet.
Yeah,
Ukshemet Tabi Avdo. This is talking about Rabban Gamliel. When died Tabi, his servant, Kibel Alav Tanchumin. He accepted for him consolation. And that's the ceremony at the at the funeral of everyone lining up in lines and having the mourner pass between the lines and be comforted as he is passing. At the funeral of Rabban Gamliel's slave, he asked the people to line up at two lines and give him tanchumim for the death of Tabi. Amrulo Talmidav, his students said to him, Loli matanu rabbeinu she'ein mikablin tanchumin alavadim. Didn't you teach us, our master, that doesn't accept comfort for slaves when they die? Amar lehen, said he to them, said Rabban Gamliel to his students, Ein tabi avdi keshar kol avadim kasher haya. My slave Tabi was not like the rest of the slaves, he was kosher. And there's lots of different stories that he kept all the mitzvot and he learned Torah and he knew sometimes more than some of the sages. He was a very, very fine guy. So the last thing we'll do is the back of the page, another story about Tabi that relates directly to what we did tonight. This is from the Talmud Yerushalmi, Perek Bet, Mishnah Aleph, and it says as follows. Ditani, as we learned in a Braita, Tabi Avdo Shel Rabban Gamliel, Tabi the slave of Rabban Gamliel, Haya, there's a misprint in my computer program. It says Haya Noten Tfilin. It should be Haya Miniach Tfilin. It's very disturbing when you see that these computer programs actually have mistakes in them.
Well, you know what? They're only as smart as the person put it in there.
Velo michu biyado hachamim. Translation. Tani used to put on tefillin and didn't
protest against him, the sages. The sages didn't protest. And that means the sages felt that mitzvot that he was exempt from, even tefillin, it was okay, it was allowed that he do them. And then there's three more words. Vika michu biyado. And here, they protested against him. Here means in the sukkah, because he slept under the bed. The assumption is that he wanted to sleep on the bed, but the hachamim said, no, get under the bed. Now, I just want to point out something very interesting. The word for here in the Aramaic we're reading is chaf aleph. Do you see where I am?
Mm-hmm.
In real Aramaic, the word is hey chaf aleph. Hacha. The hey fell out. Why did it fall out? Because in Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't pronounce the hey. And it became a silent sound. Hacha is a H, it has sound. Hacha. But it came out among the Jews in the land of Israel as Aka. Acha. Instead of ha, it was a. It wasn't pronounced. And gradually, the letter hey disappeared from the writings of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, because they couldn't pronounce the hey. They couldn't say ha, they kept saying ah. Why is it so interesting? Because the same thing happens today in Yerushalayim. The kids can't pronounce a hey.
Really?
Yeah. It's very well known.
That
the people used to say it's just Yerushalmi kids. Perhaps it's changing. But there's something about the Hebrew language that when you have it as your mother tongue, you lose the ability to pronounce a hey. Anyway, back to the subject. Back to the subject. So anyway, we have Tabi.
Like
okay. For some reason, yeah, ayin. That Americans can't pronounce an ayin. Okay. So anyway, it says here, so the point's like this. He slept under the bed, and we assume the reason he slept under the bed is because the Hachamim said, don't sleep on the bed. And that seems to prove that someone who's exempt should not do the mitzvah, because the Hachamim told him, go into the bed. But then a question, why tefillin did they let him do, but sukkah they didn't let him do? The answer is what David said. The answer is, shalot lidchok et achamim, not to push aside the achamim. It's just because there's no room.
Yeah.
Since he didn't want to take away space from the achamim, so he went under the bed. It's not that halachically he had to, it was simply derech eretz. There's no other room.
Yeah.
And then the Gemara says, im shalot lidchok et achamim, yishev lo chutz to sukkah. If it was just because he didn't want to take room away from Nachamim, why didn't he leave the sukkah completely?
Because he wanted
he wants to do.
And that's the next line. Rotze haya tabi avdosh Rabban Gamliel lishmo divra Hachamim. He wanted to hear the words of the Hachamim. So in other words, you can't learn from the fact that he slept up to the mitah that he's not allowed to fill the mitzvah. It's something that he was allowed, but there was no room for him, and he wanted to stay in the sukkah to hear the words of the hachamim, so he slept under the bed. But the conclusion is still that if you're exempt from mitzvot, you're allowed to fulfill them. And as far as the halachic issue of the Mishnah itself about sleeping under the mitah, it ends up being a machloket, and the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon say you cannot sleep under the mitah. He said next week we're not having a class. And we come back the week after.